This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Intercepted by Apple.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the punt. Fumble the football.
Bang. Bang.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
The jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, this special Combine edition live from the Convention Center in Indianapolis, right next to Lucas Oil Stadium. Thank you for joining us, everybody. John Schmelk. We're joined by Paul Schwartz to lead off our Thursday program. Two-hour shows Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Paul Dottino is en route from the airport. He'll be joining us shortly right here on BBK. And Paul's the luckiest guy because he got to do this without Paul Dottino sitting next to him and grabbing his arm violently as he talked about potential draft prospects.
The only thing I have to warn you is I was never really a leadoff hitter. You know, I'm leading off here. I was really more of like an 8-9 hitter, okay? So if I don't set the stage as the leadoff hitter as Paul Dottino would, you know, I apologize in advance.
Well, no one's going to ask for the Dottino energy because I don't want to give you a coronary. So let's start with what Ben McAdoo talked about yesterday, and I thought your article in the Post was interesting. And it was your final question that got the answer that you wrote the story about, and he really hadn't gotten a ton of questions about the offensive line. Right. So you asked him about not Eric Flowers specifically because he had been asked that question already, but the offensive line in general and whether or not the team had to rebuild it in some way, shape, or form this offseason, and you thought the answer was pretty interesting.
Well, a lot of people I talked to after the season, not around the Giants, but NFL people, said that offensive line needs help. Not a real great revelation, but they said Eli can still play. He can play better, but they need help. So many times you watch the Giants, and there are guys sitting in Eli's pocket.
And I think you quoted Troy Aikman in your article, who said that to you, right?
He said, look, Eli can play better, Troy Aikman told me, but you look at it, look, Troy's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's going to have that quarterback feel to him that's saying he can't step up. The guys are collapsing inside him. You know, he needs more room to function. I asked that to Ben McAdoo, and McAdoo said, yes, Flowers, specifically about Eric Flowers, he can play better, and he needs to play better. But Ben immediately pivoted to Eli and gave us a pretty good laundry list of things that Eli needs to do better. Faster feet, can't always worry about a clean pocket. Basically saying, you're the quarterback, you have to figure it out. You know, not every pocket in this league is clean. There are guys coming at you, you got to buy some time. You got to sit on that back foot and hitch into your throw, which sounds good. So I thought that was interesting. You know, unsolicited, Ben chose to criticize Eli more than he criticized Eric Flowers.
And, of course, part of that might be is that he might think Eli Manning can handle that a little bit better. He's been through the ringer. He's been here a long time. And Eli's the ultimate team player. So I'm sure in his own mind, he's trying to figure out things that he can do better as well and improve. So in that way, Eli being the most important player, face of the franchise, that's how it goes.
Well, it's clear. I mean, Jerry Reese after the season said, you know, Eric needs to play better. He needs to play like a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll see whether he's the left tackle. Maybe we'll have to move him. That is by far the harshest criticism anyone has given around the Giants of Eric Flowers. It's clear they want to treat him with kid gloves and kind of massage him as opposed to, you know, really push him forward. Eli doesn't care. I mean, Eli
exactly.
You know, probably that will not hear these criticisms, won't really care about them. But this is public consumption that Ben is giving out information that, you know, and, you know, I wasn't the only one who wrote this, that, yeah, Flowers needs to play better, but Eli really needs to play better. And, you know, look, Eli makes the most money, and a lot of the pressure's on him. But in my way of thinking, Eli's 36. Are his feet going to get faster now? I mean, there are drills you can do to get rid of the ball quicker and have good footwork. But is he going to get faster? Maybe the priority should be strengthening things around him so this 36-year-old quarterback can function better.
All right, the offense in general, Ben talked about that. He touched on turnovers and how that has to go down. You have to do a better job handling the football. The other thing he kind of sneaked in there, which I thought kind of went untalked about a little bit was they need more explosive plays. And I think if you look back at the numbers, I don't have them in front of me. I did this a couple weeks ago. The Giants have almost 7 fewer plays of 40 yards or more this year as opposed to last, 20 or so fewer plays of 20 yards or more. And I think that's kind of been lost in a lot of the talk about the offense this season, that they're not getting as many big plays for scores. And if you look at the games that they won, the Baltimore game that jumps out at you, the games that they win are the games they get those big plays for scores. And I think that's one of the focuses this offseason, too, to try to be a little more explosive with the football.
Well, it's Odell or bust. I mean, the running game does not give you explosive plays. That's all there is to it.
Though maybe Paul Perkins might be able to this year.
Well, I'm saying what they have done.
Correct.
What they did,
yes.
And what Ben is talking about explosive plays is they don't get a 38-yard run. They don't get a swing pass that goes for 45 yards. Now, those are not easy to come by.
Yeah, I believe they were 29th or 30th in the league in runs over 20 yards.
Right. So they don't run the ball, and they didn't. You know, once Shane Vereen left, the screen game was really not there. So the running game you can extinguish as far as big plays for what they've had. Odell is a big play, even though teams are doing everything they can to stop the big plays. Most of Odell's big plays are slants, are plays that are not designed to be big plays, but he is so skilled, he turns them into big plays. But, you know, Victor Cruz had a couple down the right sideline, but not much, and Sterling Shepard really didn't either. So the tight end was not involved in any big plays. That's something they want to improve. Look, it's easy to say. It's easy for Ben to say we had too many turnovers. There's you know, probably 20 coaches in the league who can look at their turnovers and say we had too many. It's not identifying the problem. It's fixing the problem. They had a lot of young guys, and they were a little loose with the ball.
The Giants, only one of two teams that made the playoffs that had a negative turnover ratio. The Houston Texans, the other one, they have their own quarterback issues, obviously.
He said we were fortunate to be in the playoffs with those turnovers, and that leads to one thing. The defense. The defense was so good. The defense was better than they thought, and it saved their bacon in so many games down the stretch. And that's a great thing to have, a defense that can do that. You know, it's like a closer in the bullpen. He can solve a lot of the ills of the staff, but, you know, you can't score 15, 16 points a game down the stretch of a season and expect to have success.
All right, you mentioned the tight end position. Will Tye is on the roster. Larry Donnell's a free agent. Drell Adams, of course, their sixth-round pick last year. You talked about trying to get more big plays out of the tight ends, work that seam, and that can maybe even get people out of that two-deep defense you're going to see a lot, or the Giants saw a lot last year. Can they do that with the personnel on the team, or do you think you're going to see some significant additions in either in free agency, or do you think it's more likely they'll look in the draft?
They cannot do that with the personnel on the team. You know, Will Tye is a guy who started at Florida State, you know, started playing at Florida State and finished at Stony Brook. He is what he is. I think he's on the move. He can block a little bit. He can, you know, catch intermediate passes, but he's a second-level tight end. Jarrell Adams, I have no idea what he is. I think he could develop into a blocker. He's got a nice size, and, you know, he got some speed, but he's a developmental guy. So you need a number one tight end. Where do you get that? You probably don't get it in free agency. I don't think you get it. I just don't think they're available. I don't think you get it there. And you don't have to draft it in the first round. You really don't. I mean, you know, Jeremy Shockey's a few and far between where you draft a guy. I mean, there's not a lot of tight ends drafted in the first round. Now, having said that, if O.J. Howard from Alabama is there, I would run the, you know, they still do the card.
They
right?
do, yes.
And the Giants will pick him. I mean, the Giants will pick, I'm pretty confident, very confident that the Giants will pick O.J. Howard if he's sitting there at 23. Is he going to sit there at 23? Unlikely.
Yeah, his measurements today are off the charts, and they think he's going to do great in the activities here later this weekend, too.
It's just not going to, he's going to be the first tight end off the board, and somebody, you know, 1 through 22, someone is going to take him.
Right.
So the Giants are going to have to trade up for him, or they're going to have to, you know, kiss him goodbye. Is there another tight end that's worth the 23rd pick? The kid from Miami, maybe.
He came in with an 82-inch wingspan, which is almost the equivalent of a 7-footer in the NBA, which is pretty impressive.
Which is interesting because I think Phil Jackson has already said if the Giants draft him, they're going to also use him as a power forward.
So they need him.
You get like 2-for-1 there. And maybe he can play some defense, right? Even though he's an offensive player. So this is a good draft for tight ends, everyone says. So I think people need to not panic if 23 comes and they draft a cornerback or they draft they just draft a player that's not an obvious need. I mean, I think they need a big receiver. They need a tight end. Now, they can maybe be one and the same player depending on who that tight end is.
Right.
Maybe, but probably not. But, you know, you can get a tight end in the second round or maybe the third round that can come in and play. But they need a number one tight end.
By the way, if you folks want to get in, I'll take a couple calls with Paul at the end of this spot in a few minutes. 201-939-4513. Give us a call. We'll put you on with Paul. I've asked you a couple questions about the Giants. Free agency starts little less than a week from today. Last year, the Giants were at the front of the vanguard, signing guys left and right, throwing resources around to get some excellent players in the team. You mentioned the defense. That's one of the reasons the defense was so darn impressive this year. How do you see the Giants approaching free agency this season, given they've already made the move to put that franchise tag on Jason Pierre-Paul?
Well, let me ask you this, John. What is your mall of choice when you go shopping?
I'm not really a mall guy, and I live in Manhattan. There are no malls.
All right. Okay.
Sorry.
So the
Manhattan Mall on 34th Street. How about
the
that?
The Short Hills Mall.
Fine.
Okay. Something like that.
If
you go to that mall with $100 in your pocket, or you go in with $1,000 in your pocket, your attitude is going to be different. The Giants last year had, you know, money falling out of their pockets.
Right.
Everyone knew they were going to be big players. They were coming off a bad year. They needed to save and help their defense. You know, the fact that they signed bang, 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 you know, Janoris, Snacks, and Vernon in whatever order they did, Vernon first, I guess, was not shocking. I mean, it was shocking in the swiftness of this strike, you know what I mean? But the amount of money they gave all these players. But it was not shocking. They had the money to spend. This year they don't. You rarely have that 2 years in a row. If JPP is going to cost $17 million on the cap, the Giants go into free agency with, what, $13, $14 million to spend? You need to keep $2 million of that for draft picks.
Yeah, or a little bit more, maybe.
$3 million for draft picks. So, you know, they don't have a lot of money to spend. You know, they can reconfigure some contracts if they need a little more money, but it's not going to be a big frenzy here. They'll probably sign a guy early because, you know, most teams try to target a guy and sign him early. But, you know, there's no big splash this year. They just don't have the money for it.
Well, and some of their priorities are probably going to be trying to bring back their own players. I already mentioned Jason Pierre-Paul, and I'll ask you a little bit more about him in a second. But two other guys on the roster that are free agents on that vaunted defense from last year, Jonathan Hankins and Keenan Robinson. Both guys played pretty big roles, played more than half the snaps on defense. Hankins primarily as a run stopper on first and second down. He was on the field on third down a bit. But Keenan Robinson was their third down Mike linebacker, which is a really important position in today's NFL, covering tight ends and being a part of that great secondary that did such a good job.
Yeah, I mean, my thought always with a guy like, let's say a guy like Keenan Robinson, is he replaceable? Yes, he's replaceable. But who are you? Do you have someone on the roster you can replace him with? I mean, if you're going to let him go, do you have to now sign somebody?
As a coverage guy, I think you'd probably have to bring somebody in,
so,
right?
Yeah. So then just re-sign him unless you feel you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Now Ben McAdoo did say yesterday that Goodson is going to get more playing time. Right? And he is, you know, you could just tell from him last year as a rookie, he's a guy they like.
And you get the sense that I think if Kelvin Shepard doesn't come back, he's probably going to take Shepard snaps,
yeah,
I would think.
Right, right. I mean Ben kind of, when asked about will B.J. Goodson play more middle linebacker, he said, well, he's going to play more on defense. We don't know where yet. He didn't want to pigeon him into middle linebacker. But I think his skill set is, you know, I don't see him as a coverage guy. I see him as a downhill first and second down guy.
And I believe that's what Coach Mack, the linebackers coach, said when we spoke to him. It's a couple points during the season, too.
Yeah, so I mean, that would be a stretch to say he's going to fill Keenan Robinson's role. But Keenan Robinson won't be a big ticket guy. He'll sign for another year or two, and he wants to come back, it sounds like. So that makes sense. You know, Hankins, I get mixed messages on. You know, I've talked to people with the Giants who say, how can we let this guy go? You know, I mean, why are we doing it again? Linville, we let go. You know, for Giant fans from several years ago, Cornelius Griffin was a guy that we developed and we let him go. He goes, plays great for the Redskins.
Barry Cofield,
they let go. Now, they had replacements for these guys. I get it. Now, are you to tell me, okay, the Giants plan on drafting a guy in the second round like they did with Linville Joseph and they did with Cornelius Griffin? They're just going to draft a guy in the second round and he's going to plug him in? Right away, that's a stretch. I don't think there is anyone on the roster right now who I would feel comfortable saying I can see him being in that role. So, but I just don't see how you spend, you know, Olivier Vernon's making big, big money. Snacks is making big money. JPP is going to make at least 17 this year. If they sign him to a long-term deal, that value for 2017 will be sliced maybe in half or $10 million, something like that. They'll
What's the chance you think that happens, by the way?
JPP?
In time to utilize that cap room elsewhere.
I don't feel that it is imminent. I really don't. Unless JPP really comes down and says, you know what, tells his agent, you know, I can't get $50 million in guaranteed money. You know, if I get $30 million in guaranteed money, take the deal. You know what I mean? Something like that. Because I don't see them doing that right away. You know, it doesn't behoove JPP to do that now.
Now, under the franchise tag, can other teams still contact him and tell them what they would offer him if he, say, was a free agent? And that would
It's the non-exclusive franchise.
Right.
So they can sign him
to
an offer sheet.
Yeah.
And the Giants can match it. Or they get two draft picks. The chances of that happening are zero. So, you know, it's good to talk about. And, you know, and I know it's a fun thing to, you know, we could come off the air or even on the air and discuss. Let me ask you something. If somebody signed him and they said, okay, you get two first-round draft picks, would you say, okay, I wouldn't mind losing JPP for that. That's an interesting argument if you're getting two draft picks. I think most fans would say, let's do it. You know, two first-round draft picks is gold.
In the NFL, two first-round picks, you're trading those for a franchise quarterback.
Yes.
If you look at the trades in years past.
Yes. You know, and JPP, I think, has to be realistic. He's not Olivier Vernon. He's older. He's had back surgery. He has a permanently disfigured right hand, which is a detriment. I'm sorry. He played terrific, but it is a detriment. And, you know, he's had shoulder problems in the past. He's coming off, abdominal core surgery. You know, it would look a lot better for JPP if he had closed the season out the way he was playing midway through. You know, he missed the last four games of the regular season. He missed the playoff game. And you know, you say, well, it's not his fault. No, it's not his fault, but it's a fact. He was not there. If he had played and gotten two or three more sacks and the defense surged to the finish, you know, they didn't blatantly miss him when they left, but they missed him after he left. There's no question about it.
All right, we have a call. I want to go to Jason in Pennsylvania. He has a follow-up question on the franchise tag with JPP. Jason, you're on with John Schmelk and Paul Schwartz on Giants.com. How are you, buddy? Jason, you're with us, pal?
How you guys doing?
Hey.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Jason.
Hello?
I got you loud and clear, Jason.
Okay, yeah. Okay, my question is I think Pierre-Paul wants to get paid. And he said he wasn't going to sign the franchise tag early in the year, you know, when they interviewed him. But he does want to get paid. And, you know, he doesn't have to make a deal this year. All he has to do is sign that tag. He'll get every penny. And I think that may have hurt the team in the long run, because if he doesn't make it, you know, a deal, then we're going to go into free agency, in my opinion, with the same problem we had, you know, ending the year, which is the offensive line. And I think Hankins is a good piece, and Robinson is a good piece, but if he's going to take up all that money and he's just going to say, you know, I'll just sign the tag and I'll get paid, do you think that will actually, you know, hurt the team more by franchise tagging him, or they should have just, you know, maybe come up with the deal without having the franchise tag him? Because obviously I don't think they could have, or they tried and he wasn't willing to take whatever they were giving. I would just much have rather seen the money spent on the offensive line and free agency, because as a Giants fan, I look at, you know, we went on a three-game losing streak. He was a starter, but it was our secondary that really, you know, hurt us. We won without him. We held Dallas to, you know, 7, and, you know, I just think that we could have got someone at 23 that could have came in and been really productive, and that money would have been better spent on the offensive line. Do you think it will
hurt
us this year if he signs the tender and doesn't come up with a long-term deal?
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call, man. Paul, what do you think?
Well, By franchising him, you're virtually assuring that he will play for you next year.
Which is the most important thing if you want him on the roster.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people, when you franchise, well, it's going to cost $17 million. He's not going to be happy. Look, these are the rules of engagement. This is what the CBA says. And you know, unless Jason, you know, JPP cannot sign it now. He will, you know, if he doesn't sign it, he will not show up for the OTAs. He will not be there in the spring, which he didn't do 2 years ago. Same thing. He stayed away. Would he make a fuss and kick and scream and not sign it before training camp? Maybe. But, you know, he's not going to not play this year. So once you put the tag on him, you're saying you have him for another year. So as the caller said, you know, the other option is not to do that. If you don't do that and he goes to free agency, he will be gone. When he goes to free agency, someone else will sign him and he will be gone. So now he is off your team. Now you have to replace him. So I understand offensive line is something you need to address. But now you've lost one of your best defensive ends and pass rushers. And so now you need to replace him.
Right.
So that's another hole that you've created another hole. You have $17 million, but you've created another hole which you probably cannot fill with another player. So I think they had to franchise him.
Give me an answer in 20 seconds real quick. I want to circle back to my first statement to you. How do you think the Giants do change their offensive line this offseason? Is it going to be draft, free agency, or are you going to see a mix of the guys they had back last year?
I think the fans are going to be really frustrated. I think Eric Flowers will be the starting left tackle for the first game of the season next year. I think they will be not major overhauls. I think they'll sign somebody and they'll draft somebody, but I would say probably not in the first round. It might be a guard. I don't see one of these older offensive tackles being the option. Whitworth, Okung, something like that. I just don't get a sense that's where they're going. I don't get a sense. Unless the guy comes cheap and he's just there for competitive, competition things. So I think Eric Flowers is your left tackle, and, you know, maybe John Jerry is replaced.
Paul, good stuff. We appreciate the time, my friend. Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. He joins us right here on Giants.com. Paul Dottino. Now we're joined by our next guest, Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. We got a couple calls on the line, Steve. Do you want to mind leading off with a couple calls?
Yeah, let's
call
do
some
it.
Giant fans?
Why not?
Perfect. Why not? Let's do it. All right, guys. You don't have much of a chance usually to talk to our guys from Pro Football Focus, so let's do it. Let's go to Ty in Maryland on line four. He'll be up first with us here on Giants.com with Steve. Hi, Ty.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi.
All right.
Go ahead.
Sounds like you guys are in the trenches right now. I love it. I'm loving it. Let's talk draft,
I really
like what I'm hearing from you guys. I've been on the phone lines for a little while now, and I wanted to ask the guy from Pro Focus. I didn't catch his name. I apologize for that.
Steve.
But
Palazzolo.
Steve.
You got it.
Okay.
I wasn't going to push my luck,
Steve,
okay? Not with him. I wasn't going to push
my
luck.
Make him repeat it.
Five times fast.
Go ahead, Ty. What's your question?
Okay. I wanted to know, I may be a little bit biased because I'm a Michigan fan, but I know that there are a lot of prospects coming out of Michigan this year, and there are a couple in particular that I really would like the Giants to take a look at. And we got Steve from Pro Football Focus, I wanted to know what you thought about a couple of players from Michigan. Some in particular, Chris Wormley, the D tackle. Maybe we could take a look at him.
And who else?
As far as maybe an insurance policy in case we don't re-sign Hankins. And another guy I really, really, really like in the trenches is Kyle Kalis, the right guard. I really love him. He's a mauler. He's real big and strong. I'm not sure where he falls in terms of the rounds and everything. I'm thinking he may be a second or third round type of guard, but I really like him.
Thank you, Ty.
Another guy I like.
Real quick, Ty. One
he
more.
Wants the whole team.
Give me the name, and I'll tell you all
okay,
about
it. One more. Cornerback Jordan Lewis.
Love Jordan Lewis,
amazing.
Of course.
All right, thank you, Ty. Go ahead, Steve.
Great. Let's talk Chris Wormley, the first guy that he mentioned. I think he is that penetrating interior defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. Michigan's defensive line was so loaded the last few years. He's not biased. They have tons of prospects there. Wormley's one of them.
Three technique
type. You know, he's that guy that, you know, if you have Big Snacks in the middle, I think he's a good complement that to Big Snacks, but a guy that you could still probably get in maybe the third or fourth round, because I think maybe second round, but he's a guy that's very productive for us the last few years. Kalis at guard, I think he's just solid. It's just, I say that about all these offensive linemen, but I think he's just a mid-round type of guard prospect. Certainly better, I think, as a run blocker than in pass protection. So not a clean prospect across the board, but one of those solid mid-round type of players. And then Jordan Lewis might not fit what the Giants want to get at the top of the draft with, pretty much a loaded cornerback position right now. But Lewis is a guy that can play on the outside, play in the slot, feisty man coverage type of guy. He might struggle with bigger receivers, maybe with some long speed, but that guy, he gets after it. And his coverage numbers at Pro Football Focus were exceptional the last couple of years.
I want to follow up on one Michigan prospect, Paul, because people are all over the board on him. I think you know where I'm going with
Jabril.
This. Absolutely.
Well, the Jersey guy.
Yeah.
What position do you have him playing? Is he a safety? Is he a Swiss Army knife? Where do you see him fitting in the league when he gets there, and where do you see him going off the board?
A couple of our PFF analysts want to just keep him at running back. I mean, they just keep saying that guy is better with the ball in his hands, but I still think he's a safety. I think he's a guy that you can play in the box. I don't think he's a pure linebacker, but I think when you leave him unblocked, when he's that extra man in the box, he explodes to the ball, and that's where he uses his athleticism. I just saw the other day is the over-under on his 40 is 4.37.
Wow.
And that's a legit line,
more
almost
safety.
Even, 4.37. And I didn't see that type of speed. I see the agility and the athleticism, but if he runs that, he'll turn some heads. But I don't think, you know, he's a guy that's not great at the point of attack, so you don't really necessarily want him lining up over a tight end in more of a linebacker type role, but he can cover tight ends. So I think he's a versatile guy. Use him in coverage to cover tight ends. Have him as that extra safety in the box to play the run and explode to the ball.
Steve, I want to go back to something you said just a minute ago about the linemen. Everybody seems to be telling me there are 5 rounds of linemen that belong in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th round. But that's only 3 rounds. But 5 rounds of linemen that belong in there. Is it really that full that there are so many, quote, make it guys in that area of the draft that you may not get an immediate starter where you just add water, but a guy who can give you 5, 6, 7 years at a position?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just I think it's the nature of the position right now because there's so much nickel, there's base, you know, you've got so many different packages that teams are running that you want to get that quality 30 snaps or so out of a guy. I mean, that's what Chris Wormley did at Michigan. He was a 30-snap type of guy in their deep defensive line, projects to a similar role in the NFL. And it's a loaded class at edge rusher. I think the defensive interior linemen, last year I thought it was really top-heavy. This year I think there's a couple guys at the top, but it's more of a depth type of position this year where you do get those mid-round types. Yeah.
Well, we're going to switch gears to the offensive line because I know Charlie in Portland, Maine is probably frothing at the mouth. Steve, I'm going to warn you, Charlie's a little off the wall. You're going to have fun with him.
I'm looking forward
to
this.
And we're bringing him in. Charlie, what do you got? I'm putting you on with Steve from Pro Football Focus. Now you can pester him with the questions you usually pester us with.
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Steven. Hey, I love Pro Football Focus. You're my Bible. You guys
appreciate
do
it.
Really good work. And I wanted to say when Paul was on, may the Swartz be with you. I didn't get a chance. But Steve, I got a question for you. Because, I mean, the Giants need to change their offensive line to protect Eli. And what I heard McAdoo say about throwing the blame on Eli and pretty much saying, you know, he has to get better in the old line. I think we're going to have the same old line that we had last year. But saying that, in the free agency, what is your top-rated offensive tackle, left or right? Because I know, like, Beecham is going to be a year away from an ACL. He's just going to get better. I think Will Beatty's my guy. He is a year away from all his injuries. He didn't have any training camp last year, and he came in late. So I think this year, if he can train and he can do what he's doing, I think he can get back to where he was. But you tell me, who is the top-rated offensive tackles in this free agency?
Yeah, I'd say the top guy, and it's an interesting guy because he's about 35 years old, is Andrew Whitworth from Cincinnati. And I think, if he doesn't go back to Cincinnati, you know, how much, you know, can you give him a 1 or a 2-year deal? I think I saw him running around here the other day. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing, but maybe trying to make, you know, find potential suitors. But, I think he's a guy, he's been an unbelievable left tackle, even a guard when they put him there. So I think Whitworth from Cincinnati, but we're talking about a 1 or 2 year type of stopgap, but that's by far the top guy on the market. I think a guy like Russell Okung is solid. He's now negotiating his own contracts, and I don't think he's that elite left tackle, but like I was telling Seahawks radio and fans the other day, when you go from poor to average, that is a major step forward, and Okung can at least give you some average left tackle play, so I think that's worthwhile.
Ask about your guy, Paul. Go ahead. I know you want to.
No, I don't want to go quite there yet because I think that's an interesting question, Steve, because a lot of times what people don't understand is if you can upgrade your spot,
yes,
it doesn't matter if the guy's going to the Pro Bowl or not.
Absolutely.
It just means you've improved your position, and that's what teams got to do every year.
Yeah, I mean, we average football players are extremely valuable, and I say that with a ton of respect for these NFL players, but a guy that gives you average production is extremely valuable in the NFL, and you're not going to have 22 Pro Bowlers, of course not. So, when you have a poor spot, whether it's guard, whether it's tackle, being able to upgrade that, absolutely a huge step, and that's what the offseason's all about. You upgrade in free agency, you try to fill your holes in free agency, and ultimately you want to go into the draft and say, you know what, just give me the best players. And if you continue to draft the best players regardless of need, your roster will continue to improve.
Now, I'm going to get to my guy now. He's 27. Well, he's 27 from Detroit, and I think that Riley Reiff still has more upside to him.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that I really like him. He's a young veteran who's had experience. He's been on a playoff team. He's played both sides of the line. And I do think there's more ups to him, which is why some people who will say, well, what's he done to this point? Maybe it's it's not enough for me. I think there's more.
Well, yeah, I think he's another guy that's been average to slightly above average,
yeah,
which is extremely valuable, like I've said. So even whether he takes that next step to live up to the first-round hype or not, regardless, I think, you know, a guy that can play the left side, play the right side, which you need guys to play both sides now. There's no such thing as just need a left tackle, throw anybody off to the right side because it's easier to do. It's not an easier position in the NFL today. You've got the best, a lot of the best edge rushers coming off the left side. You need two good tackles, and I think it's one of those things where you get average to slightly above players. You get solid players, and you can win with that, especially the way the Giants play football. It's get the ball out of Eli's hands, get the ball out quickly. It's a quick passing game. You just don't, you know, it's just those times where it's 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, where you need to pass protect. You need that upgrade.
I want to go to another position where I think Giant fans want to see a bit of an improvement. That's the tight end position. I know there's not a ton out there in free agency. I want to focus in on the draft for the time being. We know Ojo Howard can do a little bit of everything. He measured great today. And Njoku measured with 80-something inch wingspan. Monster.
He's going to win this week.
Yeah, he's going to be. He's going to do good out there. And we know he can catch. We know he's got long arms. He's great run after the catch. Poke the holes in Njoku's game. Why shouldn't you pick him at 23rd in the first round if you're looking at him on tape?
It's the run game. You know, he's not the best run blocker. O.J. Howard, a much cleaner run blocker, and Howard makes those outside zone blocks, and he makes really difficult blocks on the edge. He's not a perfect run blocker either, but Njoku, he moves and runs like a wide receiver. You'll be able to see that this week.
And he was in the slot a lot in Miami.
And he played a ton in the slot, exactly. So he's not your classic inline type of tight end, but we've compared him to Jordan Reed, and you know Jordan Reed is not the greatest run blocker either. So you've got to move tight end. So you know, a guy like, if you have a guy like Jarrell Adams, who we really liked last year, you could keep him on the line, and he is a good run blocker, and I think he'll evolve into a good run blocker. Then you have Njoku, actually is a perfect complement to Adams, because I think Adams is like your classic on the line tight end, and Njoku is more of your move tight end. You create mismatches, put him in the slot, move him around, and I think that is a very good fit late in the first.
And, you know, when they asked Njoku to block, it's not like he was allergic to it. He tried. He was physical. He went in and did it. They just didn't ask him to do it a whole lot, right?
And well, there's a lot of tight ends around the league that's the case. You know,
right.
There's a lot of tight ends, and, you know, I certainly think, especially in the NFL today, it's a 60-40 pass league, and even more sometimes in New York. So you want the guy that's going to affect the pass game. You know,
right.
You want a guy that's going to create mismatches as a receiver, and I think that absolutely outweighs the blocking.
I want to take a step back for just a second here, because B.J. Goodson came to the Giants this past season, was a good special teams guy, and because of the uncertainty involving Robinson and Shepard at linebacker with the Giants, a lot of people are thinking, well, can B.J. Goodson be a guy who can compete for a starting job on this team? What do you think?
I think based off what we saw last year, I thought Shepard was out of position far too often. You know, I think the linebacker position, how long has the linebacker position been a point of contention here? How long has it been?
We've heard.
I accidentally mocked Zach Cunningham in the first round a couple weeks back to the Giants, saying they're going to do it this year. This is the year they're going to draft a linebacker.
First time since Carl Banks, by the way, it would be in the first round.
I just wanted to just see what the reaction was when I did it. But look, a guy like Goodson, I think he's a worthwhile option to see if they could upgrade the position, because it's been a poor position. As great as the defense was at times last year, it's still having that impact linebacker that can help them in coverage, just make sound plays against the run. Don't overrun plays. Don't miss tackles. I think Goodson has a chance to be that guy, but it's still a position I'd be looking to attack in the draft.
He certainly looks like he hits. That we found out on special teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you get some kind of two down play out of him, you know, that there's value there. And I would love to see a guy like Zach Cunningham that has athleticism, that could be a three down option, can play in coverage and do all sorts of different things. I mean, they've needed that for years, so we'll see if this is finally the year that maybe they go after linebacker.
You mentioned Zach Cunningham, and I got a list from fans. I told them to give me names to ask some people about this week, and one of the names I got was Zach Cunningham, the linebacker. Give us a little scattering report on him, and why do you think he could be a good fit for the Giants?
Man, the guy loves contact. He will attack blockers. He's got that long frame. It kind of looks a little bit like Jalen Smith out of Notre Dame. He's not the same type of athlete, but he moves extremely well, and that length that he has, you see it in coverage as well. So he gets good depth in his zones. And
he's a Mike.
Make some plays. I think he'd play inside or outside. I think he can do a little bit of all, a little bit of everything. And one of our guys thinks he's a classic either 3-4 inside backer or 4-3 Mike that just loves contact. If it was a fullback type of game, which it's not really in the NFL, we'd have no problem putting him in there and saying, go shed this block and make a play.
Can he cover tight ends down the seam?
Yes. He's extremely
You had to go there, didn't you? You had to go there.
That's why I think he could play inside or outside.
Well, that's what you have to do in the NFL now. If you can't cover, you're a one or two down player, and that's it.
And I think people are, draft time, everybody's going to say, well, the undervalued linebacker, there's not as much value there. But the three down linebacker, the guy that doesn't come off the field, I think is more valuable than ever.
There's maybe two or three guys every year that come out that can do that.
Exactly. And it's, it's a spread game. There's only six guys in the box, not seven, not eight anymore. You need a guy that can play the run, that can cover. Yeah. Man, zone, do it all. I think Zach Cunningham's one of those guys.
Well, which is why, though, a lot of people, when they go to all those sub-packages, they want that three-headed safety situation. How deep is safety in this draft?
This is probably the best safety class we've seen in years. And, we saw Landon come out a couple of years ago, and boy, was he maybe my most fun player to watch last season. Loved watching Landon Collins. But this safety class, you have a guy like Jamal Adams at the top who can do it all. He can cover the slot. He can play the run. He can play deep coverage. Malik Hooker probably has the best center field skills that we've seen. Mm-hmm. You'll probably hear some Ed Reed type of comparisons. We've compared him to Reggie Nelson, who I think is just an excellent free safety type of player. But Hooker makes unbelievable plays on the ball on the back end. But then you have a guy like Obi Melifonwu from UConn, 6'4".
Well done, by the way.
I've been practicing. Wow. I've been saying his name in every single interview.
Very good.
So I've nailed it at this point. Very Melifonwu. Good. 6'4", 220 pounds, and he's going to run well here. He's going to be agile. They put him at cornerback at the Senior Bowl, and he was running with receivers. He's 6'4". He could press.
Wow.
So he can do a lot of stuff. I think he's going to come out of here a winner too. So there's guys beyond them that I think are just solid players. Nate Gary out of Nebraska. There are a Buda Baker from Washington who can kind of do everything. So there's a deep safety class and a versatile group of guys.
We talked to Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus yesterday, and he talked about you guys like Dalvin Cook a lot more than Leonard Fournette. So I'm not going to go there. I want to go to that next group of guys that could sneak into the back half of the first round. Christian McCaffrey is one of them. Another guy, Alvin Kamara from Tennessee. Who else from that running back group do you like to maybe sneak in back end first round or be a second round pick that teams can really find a really good three down starter without using a top 15 pick?
I'd say it's Kareem Hunt out of Toledo. The guy
was
unbelievable at the Senior Bowl.
He was big at the Senior Bowl.
He was very good there. You could see him in space. He made Jordan Lewis actually look silly on one play at the Senior Bowl. You're catching a pass on the flat. I think he's just got really good balance. He just knows how to maximize the yardage that the offensive line's giving him. The two guys you mentioned, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, similar players as they can affect the pass game. Win in the pass game, move around, win in the run game. I think both of those guys are excellent late first, second round type of prospects. This is a very deep running back class for sure this
year. Yeah, it is. And I've been advocating the Giants to go after a power back, a Natron Means type, and Samaje Perine from Oklahoma is my guy.
That's your guy?
Now, you want to shoot some holes in him for me, go ahead. But I got to tell you something, Steve. I had a personnel guy tell me the other day, you're not getting him in the third round. He may be going in round two.
I feel like he's one of the more polarizing running backs. I see people that love him. I see people that think, he's just a 4-6 guy. He's too slow. But I think he does have good feet for a big
guy. They haven't been hit by him.
What's that?
They have not been hit by him by him.
No, they haven't. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe we'll try that over here at the NFL Experience, get hit by Perine. No, so look, he had really good run blocking at Oklahoma too, so they got him to the second level quite a bit, and I think that maybe made him look a little bit better. So I want to see what he does in tight spaces and short areas when maybe the run blocking's not as good. I guess that's my question for him, but I don't hate the fit, especially if it's more third or fourth round, if he's available.
How many corners are going to go off the board in the first two rounds of this draft?
100 of them. Maybe 15.
Wow.
And I keep talking up every single position. Offensive line's bad. Well, a lot of these other positions are really deep. Corner's another one of them where if you need a 6'2" press corner, an Eli Apple type, those guys are there. If you need a zone corner, those guys are there. If you need a guy that can cover the slot, cover outside, those guys are available as well. So it's more – it's a very deep group, and it's a – I call it a great draft to just reshape your secondary. You could double up on corner in the first, second, maybe third round. Take two guys – and really reshape what you're doing on the back end.
We have talked so much in the last couple of weeks on the program about the dearth of real prospects at quarterback after you get past the first couple of guys. So many people still think the Giants need to find that next franchise guy, and he's got to be found in this draft. I don't know that I agree with that because I think the drop-off after the top few guys is a lot. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think that there's no Dak Prescott. Everybody's going to say, who's the Dak Prescott this year?
Or Tom Brady for that matter.
Or Tom Brady. Let's wait another 15, 20 years and we'll find
exactly.
him. So, look, I don't think that there's a guy that I love in the mid-rounds and I'm like, hey, that's a guy. But if I'm in the Giants' shoes, much like if I'm Pittsburgh or if I'm the Chargers, that quarterback class of Rivers, Roethlisberger, and Eli, I just start taking QBs. I think it's time to just start drafting quarterbacks every single year. see what happens, see what sticks. It's not that you're trying to push Eli out the door, but I think you have to prepare for the future and just keep loading up on guys and see what happens. So a guy like Davis Webb, you know, might be worth a shot. I don't love him, but, you know, mid-round has some potential. And
that's kind of the guy I was thinking
of.
But that's
what you're getting, a guy that's really hit or miss, and you just kind of hope you hit lightning in a bottle, because I think that's where we are. Nathan Peterman from Pittsburgh, I feel like the NFL is a little bit higher on him than I am. He did really well at the Senior Bowl, might end up as a second-round player, but if you get him in the third or fourth, there's a guy I wouldn't mind having on my roster that I could trust as a backup to maybe spot start at some point and develop.
Steve, final question for me. The one position we haven't mentioned, I know there could be seven of these guys going in the first round, too, and that's defensive end. It's great edge class.
Yep.
Who are guys that you think that could be available? And we know Jerry Reese likes to pick pass rushers, the guys that affect the game from up front. It's just what the Giants do. They like to be good up front. Who are guys that you think fit in as a 4-3 defensive end rather than, you know, your outside stand-up rusher in the 3-4 traditionally and then put the hand down on third down that could be there at 23? I know Mike said he likes Barnett. I'm not sure he's going to get that far.
I think he should be picked higher.
I agree. After he's gone, who else do you think could be there that the Giants might be interested in first, second round?
I think Mike said Barnett because we anticipate the NFL not liking him as much as we did because his production was unbelievable, but he doesn't have that classic edge rusher look, so we expect him to drop a little bit, even though he shouldn't. I think a guy like Carl Lawson out of Auburn will be there. Charles Harris out of Missouri might be there. Tack McKinley out of UCLA. Harris and Lawson are not great against the run, but I think as far as pure pass rushers go, especially you have JPP back right now. He plays early downs. If you want a pure pass rusher to complement him right now, develop as a run defender. Charles Harris, Missouri, and Carl Lawson out of Auburn, they fit really well. Tack McKinley out of UCLA, McKinley. He's a guy that continues to develop. I think he could be that classic 4-3 end as well.
Right, so now we've kind of gotten the broad perspective on this draft class, a lot of people. So I want to try to dig into the details with you a little bit here on some of these guys. And we didn't talk to Steve Palazzolo about the offensive line. So I want to talk to you a little about these offensive line prospects. Broadly speaking, if these guys were in a more typical year, like the last two or three years, when you have some tackle prospects that are top 10, top 15 picks, are these guys mid-second-round picks? Are they only being talked about in the first round because of the paucity of guys that are out there? Or do you think Ryan Ramczyk really is a legitimate first-round tackle?
I think he is a legitimate top 20 type of tackle. The question with him is his journey to this point. And that's one of the most fascinating aspects of this draft is figuring out those journeys. A guy that didn't, you know, after high school, didn't get a lot of recruiting attention, kind of took a year off from football. Then he goes to Division III.
Stevens Point, right?
Right, yeah. Stevens Point, Wisconsin, which is his hometown team. You know, played there, and he kind of, the love for football was reinvigorated there, and he figured out, you know, I could play at a higher level. And he goes to Wisconsin, red shirts, and then this year's his only year as a starter at left tackle. But you saw early on that the guy's the real deal. Against LSU in the opener, very good athlete at that size. The sample size just isn't ideal. And so I think there's a few things he needs to work on, but for the most part, I think it's all there. It's not a talent issue, more of an inexperience issue. So with Ramczyk, I think you're looking at a true top 20 pick. The big issue here is the medicals.
The hip surgery,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So how does the hip check out? As long as, you know, doctors give two thumbs up, rehab's on pace to, you know, be fine for training camp, I think that we see Ramczyk go early, and especially with the fact that this isn't a great tackle class. If you want to tackle, you better get him early, you know, to your original point. Are these guys true first-round picks? Like Cam Robinson, to me, he's not a true first-round pick.
How about Bowles?
He's another interesting one. He's going to be a 25-year-old rookie who is a outstanding athlete, and that's why I think he's going to go in the first round. But you're talking about a guy who took a couple years off from college. He went on a church mission that kind of, you know, got his love for football back. Went to Snow College, then went to Utah. You see the athleticism right off the bat, but he needs a lot of work in a strength and conditioning program, build up that base, that core strength, that upper body power, and then just technique work. And so for a player with those kind of questions, ideally, first round's not where you want to take him, but that's probably where you need to take him if you want to tackle this year.
Now, John can tell you, I just landed about 45 minutes ago, so I'm a tad late coming into the party, but what is the latest that we know about Ramczyk's medical schedule in terms of when he's going to get checked out? Is he going to do any kind of pro day? Last that I heard was that April before he's able to do much.
Right. That's probably, I think we're still on track. We haven't heard yet. The offensive linemen just had their medicals, so we don't know yet. They had their medicals yesterday. That will be interesting, and that'll be the key to his draft stock, his draft grade.
He's the Miles Jack of this draft.
To a point, yeah.
In a way.
Right, and with Miles Jack, you know, I think when at the combine we were really worried about the information we received, and then it, you know, stayed true. He fell to the second round. With Ramczyk, I'm hoping for better results,
right.
You know, more favorable reviews from the doctors and the trainers. You know, this type of thing, it sounds worse than it is. You know, I think a hip injury is obviously not ideal for an offensive lineman.
It's not your
lineman.
Hip.
Yeah, true. But he played through it a part of the year. So, you know, we know that it's not something that kept him off the field. He played through it. And as long as there's no long-term effects, I think it's something that teams will be able to overlook and be able to get him in camp and feel good about it.
Now, if you don't want to pick an offensive lineman in the first round and you want to wait and you want to say, you know what, maybe I can find a tackle I can develop down the road, is there depth here? Are we talking about not a lot of guys at the top end, but you can find some guys a little bit later? Or are we looking at not a lot of guys on any level here when you look at these rounds in the draft?
I think there are a few. Antonio Garcia from Troy is a player who went to the Senior Bowl, had a good week there. A little up and down, but you see the flashes. You see why some scouts really like him. He's built really well. He's a good athlete. So I think Antonio Garcia, if you miss out on one of those tackles early in the first round, he's the consolation prize in the second or third round. Roderick Johnson out of Florida State, a guy who moves really well. Athleticism is there. Needs to really improve that core balance so he's more balanced in his kick slide and with a shuffle, able to punch on the move, adjust the countermeasures. I think Roderick Johnson, a junior coming out of Florida State, could have used another year. But coming out early, I think he saw this tackle class and thought, hey, I can capitalize on this. And so he's probably going to be somewhere in that top 100 picks where normally probably not. More of a developmental guy. So if you need someone to start early, I think Ramczyk's the guy. And then after that, a lot of question marks.
You know, we were just talking to Steve from Pro Football Focus. And like I said to him, there seem to be so many third, fourth, and fifth round guys that you could just fill up a supermarket full of those guys who are supposed to be reliable prospects, who could be long-term starters, but they're not necessarily going to go to any Pro Bowls. Is that how you see it in terms of the offensive line? Because we've talked about how maybe some of the guys at the top are overvalued.
Right. And you need those guys. You know, not every, you know, maybe besides the Cowboys, have, you know, that elite offensive line where it's just studs at every spot. You need guys that are going to fill out your roster and provide depth, maybe some position flexibility, can play inside, play outside, help you out at different spots. And I think you can find those guys in this draft. A player like Deion Dawkins from Temple, who I thought really had a good week in Mobile, might have pushed him up even in the second round area. But before he's looked at third, fourth round, you know, the tackle class isn't great. The center class isn't great. But I think the guards, there's some depth there. I think you can find guys second, third, fourth round that can come in and provide instant depth and fight for a starting spot.
How about when you take a look at this group, we've had some measurements going on already. Mm-hmm. Anybody jump out at you that you think is a big impact on their stock, good or bad, that you've seen come through the measurement process so far?
I think for the most part it's been favorable for the prospect. I think the biggest red flag has been the difference between the Senior Bowl measurements and the measurements here.
And Garcia was one of them, right?
Garcia's one.
20 pounds heavier, I think, right?
He was 9 pounds heavier. Which is a good adjustment for him. But Forrest Lamp, the talented offensive, he was an offensive tackle at Western Kentucky. I think he's a better guard. He's in that Zach Martin type of mold. His arms grew by an inch, which for an offensive lineman, every inch is important.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think most teams, they use the measurements here at the Combine, or when they work them out themselves, they'll use their own measurements and not the Senior Bowl. But at the Senior Bowl, he was 31 and an eighth inch arms, which is tiny.
Short for a tackle, obviously.
Right,
yeah.
And so I think that kind of confirmed he's going to be a guard or even a center at the NFL level. But then here, it was 32 and a quarter, which it's solid. It's not great. But I think that the difference, and we saw several prospects, Garcia, his arm length was bigger here, Taylor Moten from Western Michigan, another guy. That was kind of the biggest head turner, that why the difference, what's going on. But I've talked to other teams who have measured Forrest Lamp separately, and they've received similar results, 32 and a quarter, 32 and a half. So it seems like the Senior Bowl measurements were off. I think Forrest Lamp cemented himself as a first-round pick, and I think he will when we see him work out as well.
We're back here at Indianapolis on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live, and now another guest. We've heard him before, previewing the draft last year, Kyle Krabs, Director of Scouting for NDT Scouting. Kyle, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
No question. Do you put that mic a little bit closer to your mouth for me? That is perfect. There we go. All right. This draft class, again, we talked about it in kind of broad in a broad way so far. We're going to try to focus in on some of the details with you right now. We just had Dane on. We talked a lot about some of the positions. We didn't really talk much about him with the running back class, which I know a lot of people say is very deep. We've talked about the guys at the top, the Fournettes, the Cooks, Kamara from Tennessee, McCaffrey, Kareem Hunt even I know a lot of people love as a second-round pick maybe. He had a big Senior Bowl. Who are some of the guys that you don't think are being mentioned enough that you think could be a pick in the third, fourth, maybe even the fifth round, like the Giants got Paul Perkins last year, that could step in and be a real help at the running back position this year for an NFL team?
I'm surprised there's not more buzz on Wayne Gallman from Clemson. I really like his game. He's very smooth with his cuts. If you want him, he's probably end of day two, so like a round three kind of guy. But I think his value is much greater than that. I would be willing to invest a pick in round two on somebody like that just because he brings an Arian Foster-style smoothness. He's not as physical, a little less prone to stick his nose into traffic and really just try and maximize his runs. But he's a name that there's not a lot of steam on that I'm kind of curious as to why, because you watch the film and I really like that. And then you start getting into some of the specialists. If you look at pass catchers, you've got Elijah McGuire from Louisiana Lafayette and Dari Agumbale from Wisconsin.
Good job with that, by the way.
Yeah, I had to stop and think about it. Both of those guys are James White-style backs, and you saw in the Super Bowl how valuable a pass-catching running back can be. Those guys, if you're getting into the middle of day three, your round five, round six type of guys, those guys can bring you tremendous value for what they can do as far as moving the chains and being active on third down. And they have a lot of nice quickness and wiggle to them, so they can create yardage on their own. So it's really what flavor are you looking for, because there's something for everybody with this running back class.
And talking about the running backs, it seems as though, for the most part, the last few years, we've been talking about rotational guys, niche guys, guys who have certain skill sets. There are not a ton of Ezekiel Elliotts out there who can play like every down, you know, like Adrian Peterson that I've been doing for the Vikings for so many years. Is that more difficult for you guys when you're scouting players to say, look, if an NFL team wants a guy who's going to have 25 touches a game, can this guy project to do that? Or you just say, hey, you know what? He's a situational player, and that's what he's going to be, and there's nothing else there.
Yeah, that's like everybody when you're evaluating running backs, you want to find that guy that you give the ball to 25, 30 times a game. Like that's your utopian situation, is you've got a guy that can play on third downs, he can pass block, he can catch the ball, he will always be on the field, he's the centerpiece of your offense as far as the running game is concerned. But that's not the way the league's really trended, and especially with this awareness of longevity and taking care of your bodies, and it's really trended towards you want guys that a guy has 200 carries, another guy has 120, 150 carries, and touches that way, and your pass catching specialist. So just being realistic with yourself when you're watching these guys and say, if there's a guy that you feel confident can have 250, 300 carries in a season, those are the guys that are typically going to trend up towards the top. But it's because they can do all of these other things. And then understanding, you know, and that's kind of the devaluation of the running back position in general, is you have your specialists. You have your first down and second down carriers. You have your short yardage backs and your pass catchers. And all of those guys are niche guys. And those are the guys that you really find your value with in the middle and end of the draft.
You talk about trends. And this is a great defensive end class. A lot of edge rushers that can get after the quarterback. Last year, it was a very slow defensive end class, not a lot of edge guys. Are we going to see more and more edge guys coming out because college has become such a passing-oriented game where guys don't run the power run game anymore, so you need pass rushers. Are we going to see more and more pass rushers, you think, high on draft boards in the next few years as college continues to go more towards the spread?
Yeah, and I think the troubling trend, we're talking about trends here with that, is a lot of these pass rushers are very raw as far as what they do. They'll line up in wide angles, and they'll use their athletic explosiveness in first step.
Just try to beat the corner,
and they'll turn that corner, and a lot of these offensive tackles, you know, you hear a lot of offensive line coaches in the NFL now talking about, you know, these balls of clay that they have to try and mold because as far as their pass sets and their angles, and that's all off with this spread offense trend in college football. So there's a lot more projection there as far as you're getting a lot of raw athletes that you have to be comfortable with, and understanding that there's a first-year projection, there's a three-year projection, and there's a second contract projection for these guys.
Sure.
And if you're able to project that and feel comfortable with what you're getting in year three and year five, then maybe there's guys that even if they're not the most complete package right now, you can still see it being worth an investment early on in the draft.
See, I know we're going big picture here, but I find this whole thing fascinating because, you know, when guys are picked in the first round, so many people think you just add water and they're ready to go.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, unless they're coming from a program where that guy's positional coach was really getting him prepped for the pros.
Like Alabama.
The guy's not ready.
Right.
You know, and to me, that's got to be the most difficult position for you to be in, because here you are trying to, you know, grade these guys. You're trying to project them into the NFL, but yet they're not getting prepped properly.
Right.
And then the NFL, they can't prep them either because they're not hitting.
Right. And we just heard a couple coaches in the press conferences here today talk about you have to understand what your coaches are looking for, identify those traits, and dial in on those traits and try and mute out the rest. Because if you're looking at the verbatim and you're doing a literal interpretation of what you're seeing with their on-the-field product in college, you're really going to have a hard time finding guys that you can get excited about, because there's so much that's not translatable with what they're being asked to do in college versus what they're being asked to do in the NFL. But that's what Rick Smith, the general manager of the Houston Texans, said. That's why we're here. That's our job.
Yeah, and it's not easy, certainly. And, you know, we've talked about the depth in this draft class. Wide receiver, not as deep as it's been in years past, but you do have guys later on that you can find some players that can help you. We've had a couple fans submit some names of players to ask guys like you what you think of them. One name I got was Josh Reynolds, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M. A bigger guy, 6'3". What's your take on him?
I love Josh. I watched his summer film from his junior season, and I thought he had Josh Doctson type abilities with his high point, contested catch ability, his ability to be a vertical receiver. I had a chance to talk to him at the Senior Bowl, and I asked him, what's one thing that about yourself that you think is being underrated? And he said, my speed. And it's really difficult with that passing offense that they had at Texas A&M with an inaccurate quarterback, and just the timing of the passing offense there was very off this year. So he didn't get a chance to showcase what he does best, and his ability to separate vertically didn't have a great chance to shine because he's not getting a lot of accurate looks down the field. But I really like him. I would be comfortable spending a day two draft selection on him, whether that's in the second round if you need it.
Wow.
Round three would probably be a great value for him, but I really like his game.
You know, we've been talking a lot about the tight ends and obviously the linemen, the trenches. The Giants need these kinds of positions a lot. I don't think we've really addressed linebacker with you to this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Shepard. We don't know what's going to happen with Robinson. I know you talked about a first rounder potentially before, John, but
yeah,
they're probably not going to go, since Carl Banks was the last linebacker they drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
They're probably not going there. Is there a guy in the second day or third day that may project as a potential at least two down starter
in the middle?
Yeah, Jared Davis from Florida is a name that, you know, he's had some durability issues, but his athletic ability is tremendous. Very good open field athlete. Very effective covering the middle of the field and defending against tight ends and pass coverage. And you watch his Vanderbilt game this past season. It was a great showcase for him. He's going to get knocked because people are going to watch the Alabama game. And it was the highest profile game they had this year. And he came into that game very, very hurt and had a very hard time. He came off the field a couple times. He looked slow and stiff. And but if you watch him when he's healthy, his ability is excellent. And I think in this linebacker class, I know Dane just got done talking to you guys about Hassan Reddick.
Yes.
And Hassan Reddick and the Alabama guy, Reuben Foster.
Yep.
Those two are, in my opinion, they're first-round locks. And because linebacker has kind of become, unless you are that blue-chip prospect, another devalued position, I think
Like the running backs.
Jared Davis has the potential to be there in round two if you're looking for a middle linebacker.
Cool. No, I'm good.
I was going to give you a second.
No, I want to touch on the linebackers.
I want to stick with wide receiver here for a second. John Ross, I think, is an interesting guy this week. Some people project him into the bottom half of that first round to join both Corey Davis and, of course, Mike Williams out of Clemson. What do you think he needs to show here? What does he have to run? And what do the medicals have to show for teams to be comfortable taking him either late first round, early second?
Yeah, I would say I'll never say never because we just watched Will Fuller go in the first round last year. But
okay.
I'm not thrilled about that prospect of him being John Ross being a first round draft selection. I think he's very similar with his strengths and weaknesses to what you see from someone like Tyler Lockett, who was a round three selection for the Seattle Seahawks. He's more twitched up. He's more explosive. We know he's going to run a blazing fast 40 time. I've heard some people say his testing in the prep has been consistently in the high 4.2s. So, flying. The expectation is he's going to fly. it's all about the medicals with him. You know, it's really scary with the durability. And, you know, there's some talk going on right now about Brandon Cooks potentially being moved from New Orleans. I would rather have Brandon Cooks than John Ross, because you know what you're getting, and there's less of those injury concerns there. But they're similarly styled players.
Yeah. I want to go offense here, too. I want to go quarterback, because I don't think this draft has, once you get past those top guys right away, the second, third, fourth round guy that could be the potential next franchise quarterback for the Giants. Now, if you disagree, that's great. I'd like to hear about it.
Sure.
At the same time, what do you think next year's draft class? I'm going to ask you to project a little bit. Is there a better crop there that maybe they go stopgap with a veteran behind Eli this year, and then think next year they get the guy of the future?
If they get an opportunity to draft somebody like Jerod Evans from Virginia Tech this year in the late rounds, I think that would be a worthwhile investment.
You're the second guy that's mentioned him to me this weekend, actually.
He's got a really intriguing skill set. Nice vertical passer. Is another guy that's difficult to project because his offense was all screen passes, back shoulder throws, and vertical throws.
Lovely.
I saw a lot of parallels to what I saw from Brett Hundley out of UCLA when Hundley came out. He's more raw than Hundley was, which is saying something, because Hundley ended up being, I believe, a fifth-round draft selection. But somebody like him, I could at least see the upside there, where if everything clicks, you can probably win with him, because his arm talent's pretty good.
Okay.
And then Nate Peterman from Pittsburgh is another name that
I've heard
him
too.
He's a low ceiling starter, but he's a high floor guy. I don't think he's necessarily somebody that you're going to want to sling the rock 40 times a game with. But very responsible with the football. His decision-making is very crisp. His accuracy in the short and intermediate areas of the field is very good. So different styles. Peterman's probably going to be a little more rich, as far as he's probably going to be a second-round pick, just because there's that's really barren in the middle rounds this year with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So if you want him, you're going to have to get him pretty early.
Two running backs that a couple fans sent in they want to know about that probably will be middle-round picks, Marlon Mack and Jamal Williams out of BYU.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on those guys? Do you think they could be impact role players at the running back position once they get drafted, and where do you think they might go?
Well, I still think you guys are sitting on a gold mine with Paul Perkins. I think he's going
to be... You're about the third person to say that to me this week, too.
He was my third running back last year. I had him in my top 50 overall players. He's a really, really good runner.
I agree with you.
I'm hoping.
How many touches a game, though, do you want to give him? Do you want him to be part of a 1-2 punch, or do you really want to try to get him 22 a game?
I don't think you can feed him like that. Like, his stylistically, what he is best at is that making the first guy miss and then getting his yardage as compared to putting his head down and running through guys.
Agreed.
So probably 16 to 18 touches a game is a good number for him.
I agree.
Mac is similar. He's bigger than Perkins, but he's very much a make the first guy miss. He's very boom or bust. Likes to try and find the sideline, almost to a fault sometimes.
That can be dangerous.
Yeah. If it's bottled up, he is very reckless at the point of attack. If that initial gap is kind of sealed, he'll lose yardage sometimes. He's a home run style hitter, home run mentality.
Coaches hate minus plays.
Yes. Yes, they do. Don't put me in second and 12, please.
No. Not a good idea.
Jamal is, I was expecting him to be a lot bigger than what he was. He runs very physical, but he came in at the Senior Bowl at only, I believe, like 210, 215 pounds. So he runs like he's 230.
He's a downhill guy.
Yeah, he'd be a nice foil. He's got good balance, and his ability to take contact in the upper body and still sustain his forward push is pretty strong. There's some questions off the field there that he'll have to answer here this weekend, as far as he took a year off from the BYU program. And he's a rarity for BYU prospects, because he's a senior who took a year off, and he's still only 21 years old.
Right.
Most of these BYU kids are 24, 25
years old.
Yeah,
because they go on two-year missions a lot of the time.
Yeah, so he's a really interesting case, and I think if you're looking for a third-down guy that has the ability to take contact and move the pile a little bit, he's an interesting choice.
Finally, anybody that you think this weekend's extremely important for in terms of either medical, interviews, combine performance on the field that you think people might wake up to and be, well, you know what, maybe I wasn't too high in this guy, but after this weekend, we really got to consider him.
Sure. I got two, because I'm going to be greedy here.
Go ahead, please.
Carlos Henderson, the wide receiver from Louisiana Tech, is really explosive. The name that I compared him to in December when I really got into some of his film was Corey Coleman. Physically comparable athletes. They win in similar ways. They're both somewhat raw as route runners. I actually think Henderson's a little more polished as far as his receiving skills than what Coleman is, where Coleman's just an elite athlete. And then the other one is T.J. Watt from Wisconsin as a pass rusher. I really like his game. He's only a two-year defensive player. He came in as a three-star tight end recruit, and he has some of the most impressive handwork that I've seen out of any of the edge defenders in this year's class. And he's only been playing the defensive side of the ball for 2 years.
And he's more of a 3-4 edge guy, right?
Yeah, so he's a stand-up guy. But he's going to have to test well because some people think he's an average athlete. But if he comes in and he tests above average against historically edge defenders, what they've done over the past 10 years or so, he's really going to get some traction because the production's there. Obviously, the lineage is there. Everybody's going to make that comparison. And he's a really excitable. Yes.
Yeah.
he's a really excitable player for me, though. I really like his game.
But the point does go back into the circle where you're talking about a program that does teach the trenches well.
Yes. Yeah.
So that does carry some weight.
That's very impressive for a two-year player to have the amount of polish that he has with his ability to win at first contact. It's really impressive stuff.
Kyle, awesome stuff. We appreciate the time. But before
Thank
we say goodbye,
so
I'm supposed
Thank
to
you.
Get your prediction for the Giants at 23.
Oh, we're doing this again, huh?
Yeah, we are.
I believe I went on the record with Zeke last year, so 23. I'll say Hassan Reddick.
Oh, that's a good
one.
I'm
going to go with Hassan Reddick.
Breaking the linebacker streak.
Okay. Write it down.
And, you know, we had somebody think Zach Cunningham in there for a linebacker, too, so that's another guy. So, excellent. Kyle, great stuff. And we'll talk to you down the road, okay?
Thank you very much.
Kyle Krabs, NDT Scouting. Make sure you check him out on Twitter. Thanks for joining us.